Your latest book is called Everyone Leads, How to Revitalise the Catholic Church. Just give us an idea as to the background of this book, where the idea came from.
The shortest version would be that the book is a call to action. I'm a lifelong Catholic, delighted to be a Catholic, but it's also struck me that we have to be much more frank and forthright about some of the challenges we have, and accept the fact that everybody really has to play a role in doing something about them. And we have to have a culture that enables that and a culture where people feel some responsibility.
You're talking about challenges. You actually describe this as the biggest crisis in the last five centuries, don't you?
Yes. And I know that's a very provocative idea. And, you know, look, I'm not a bomb thrower from an ideological wing of the church, but I really was challenging people to think about some of these numbers. For example, you know, in the United States, but in many, many countries, you look at young adults, very, very small interest in organized religion in the Catholic Church. You look at sacramental participation, numbers going down for decades in many countries. You look in many countries and people who are baptized, their willingness even to call themselves Catholic, dropping in many countries. And to me, when we put all of these things together, I think it's worth saying, okay, please think about a time when we've had to struggle with a constellation, a combination of challenges this great, you know? And I know when we use the word crisis, people think, oh, there's an earthquake, that's a crisis, and we fix it and it goes on. But in some ways, I think the more debilitating, the more harmful crises are somehow silent. Like, we walk around, we go to church, it's fine. People don't feel that there's a crisis. And I think in some ways, those are the most deadly because you can ignore them.
You're talking about these numbers from a very Western perspective. As you mentioned in the book, it's not like that in Africa or Asia where numbers are growing.
Yes, and that's a very fair comment. And, you know, one of the things I mention in the book is I could write 10 books on everything that's positive and going well. And, you know, I myself have wonderful experiences in church and as part of the church, and I'm part of a big healthcare ministry. And you're completely right. You know, the story of the growth of the church in Africa especially is, you know, is almost beyond belief. More than 200% growth in just a few decades. And many pockets of Asia, we see the same. Lots of vocations coming out of Africa, India, many places. And those are all wonderful, and I don't mean to deny any of those. But I guess I would say this, that to me, we as a church, you know, have yet to prove that we can answer the challenges that come along with fully developed societies in modernity. You know, in developing settings like Africa, we're doing really well, and let's hope they have a secret to teach the rest of us. But I think we only would know that for sure when we get to highly developed urban situations, you know, the kind of situations that have led folks in my United States, but in urban settings all across Europe, Australia, elsewhere, to turn away from organized religion and the church and to be more skeptical and postmodern.
So you're saying the crisis may yet happen in these other
places
where
the
numbers are...
Exactly. And I'm not wishing that on anyone. I'm not trying to undercut the wonderful things that are going on there. But I'm just saying I really think it's inappropriate to sort of point to some of the places where things are going well and saying, okay, this guy is just a naysayer to talk about things in crisis. I really think that's a short-sighted and dangerous way for us as a church to think about our predicament.
As you say, this book is a call to action. What is the basis of this new strategy that you're calling for?
The most fundamental call, the most fundamental part of the new strategy is really the title, Everyone Leads, you know? And that's not the way people think in any organizations. My background is in banking, and you know, you tend to think, oh, the chief executive is a leader and we're all followers. And that's true in the church as well, you know. We tend to think, oh, you know, the Pope's the leader, or maybe the cardinal or bishop of my diocese. And there's many absolutely true ways in which that is true, and I'm not trying to undermine hierarchy or authority or roles. But I am saying this. For example, Pope Benedict XVI introduced this idea of everybody is co-responsible for the church. And in fact, Cardinal Farrell, I noticed, just echoed that very same phrase this last week. And when you think about a word like that, you know, if you're responsible for something, it means I understand what's going on. I feel some real ownership in the whole thing. I know that I have a real role in making it work. So to me, that's how I get to Everyone Leads, you know. And when you think of organizations, especially organizations with challenges now in the modern world, there's no organization, again, take my example of banking, that would believe that one executive or a small group of executives can show all the initiative, make all the decisions, come up with all the creative ideas to help the organization face its many, many challenges. And I think it's exactly the same for the Catholic Church.
To be fair, the idea of involving all lay people as well as just the leadership goes back half a century to the Second Vatican Council, and yet it has largely not taken place, this change in style, if you like, over the last 50 years. Why is that?
Yeah, without doubt, you know, you're right. And let me go back to my own United States. I recently saw some statistics that only about 30% of regular Mass-goers, not like casual Catholics, only 30% of regular Mass-goers in the U.S. would say that they understand well how to get involved in ministry. Only about half even feel invited. You know, and to me, based on what you just introduced about the Second Vatican Council, I mean, how could we possibly be in that predicament? But your question to me is, you know, why is it that way?
And it's all very well calling for it, but it doesn't seem to happen.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I suspect that's a really complicated question. You know, I mean, among the things I'd say is, it's really hard to change culture. I know that. Coming from working in a plain old company that was 100 years old, we're in an institution that's 2,000 years old, you know, and I think it's hard to come to grips with just how deeply a culture can get entrenched. And our culture does have its sort of hierarchical aspects to it. You know, the Pope is the one who talks about clericalism as being a danger and a sin. And if we're not careful, that kind of thing can take root and, frankly, has taken root. That's not my word. This is what the Pope says. So, I think there's probably a constellation of reasons why it's been difficult for us to change our culture. And, frankly, that's part of the way why I started the book with some really forceful, difficult news. Because often in organizations, they only change when people feel we can't keep going like this. You know, it's just not sustainable. And that was the reason why I started with some really frank, difficult news.
You mentioned Pope Francis, his criticism of the clerical culture, and I think many people would suggest that he is doing exactly what you're talking about, trying to change the strategy, the culture, and the leadership style.
It's my impression, too, you know, that that's absolutely right. And, you know, I think now part of our challenge is, okay, so what do we do? He's kind of made the call, but as I would see it, we haven't quite connected all the dots. You know, when you think about his approval rating, he's generated great goodwill, and that's really important for the church and for any organization. You know, that's an asset. But I don't know that we've quite connected the dots in terms of follow-through. You know, for example, levels of mass participation haven't really budged very much. So that's just one example. But, you know, how can we translate goodwill or his call to action to get some real traction on the ground? I think that's our challenge as a church overall. And I never pretend that I have the answers or the best answers. In a way, part of the idea of the book was to open a conversation. And to the question you ask, you know, so but the Pope has made the call, how do we take a step forward? It is very likely, I would say, that 100,000 listeners right now would have one or two or five much better ideas than I would ever come up with. We just need to get better at making people feel encouraged and a responsibility to share those ideas and even to take some of those initiatives themselves.
You say you don't have all the answers, but you do have some quite specific practical suggestions, don't you, as how to do this, how to build on the kind of reforms that the Pope is exactly calling for?
Yes, I put out there a strategy for discussion. Okay, I'm a business person, so that's a kind of a frame that would come to my mind. And I call it an Easter strategy because everybody has to have an acronym so people will remember things. But of course, Easter is very fitting for us as Christians, as Catholics especially.
So let's start with the E then.
Yes, and the E and the A in some ways would be the cultural, you know, how we need to change our way of thinking and behaving. And E is for being more entrepreneurial. And when people hear that word, they think of, oh, let's start a business like Bill Gates. And that's in no way what I have in mind. I mean it in the sense of to be not just more creative in the sense of I design the parish bulletin differently, but more fundamentally creative, you know, more imaginative in terms of, is there a different way we could do this? And to be willing, and this may be the most important part, to be willing to take the risk of failure in trying new things. Again, I used the example of young adults before, and let's, in the United States, be frank enough to admit that we, in many ways, don't know how to engage young adults well. And to me, that's a perfect petri dish, you know, a perfect little laboratory for entrepreneurialism, for experimentation. Let's try something. Who cares if it doesn't work? We'll learn something. And if it does work, let's learn how to replicate things quickly. You know, the church is a fabulous network, and when we get good ideas, they shouldn't sit in one parish or one diocese, but quickly we should find a way to push them through the whole network.
So E for entrepreneurial, A for?
And A for being accountable. And let me explain the idea of accountability in this way. I once remember a meeting where somebody new was hired and then introduced to a management team. And one of the guys on the management team said, you're most welcome. Great to have you. Could you please come back in 3 months and just tell us, how will we know when you're successful? And to me, that was a great phrase and a great way to understand what I'm talking about when I say accountability. In other words, how do we know we're successful? You know, there are many things that we pledge and say are priorities for us as a church. For example, that when people come to Mass, that they would have a profound experience and ultimately, over time, a conversion of sorts, you know, that somehow they would be transformed. How do we know that's happening in our parishes? If we're not willing to ask the questions, you know, you come to this parish each week, how's it going? You know, are you growing in your spiritual life, stagnating, nothing's changing? And how have we done over time? Are we doing better this year than last year? So that would be an example of holding ourselves accountable, you know. And a more basic one is that Jesus told us to make disciples. You know, that was the last instruction he gives. Mm-hmm. So how are we doing at that? And to me, it's really not enough to say the total number of baptized people has grown this year as opposed to last year, because that masks what's really going on underneath, you know, of those who are baptized and are now adults. Are they still participating? Are they growing? Or would we really call them disciples by their behavior? Are we trying to track that difficult thing? So accountability in general means that we say to ourselves, these are the things that are really important, and that we then find ways to monitor and measure and see if those things are going well. And I don't mean it in a way that has to do with blaming, attacking, firing, all of that nonsense. I just mean it in the sense of let's be responsible, let's be co-responsible, let's take ownership and be accountable for what Jesus asked us to do.
So then you move on to S and T, service and transformation.
Yeah, and I point out that if you're a parish priest, you're a diocese, you're the Catholic Church, there are dozens, hundreds of things you have to do. And sometimes I think it helps to try to boil things down into a very manageable number of really important things that reflect what's essential. And for us, the way I described in the book, among the things that are essential for the Catholic Church is that we serve those who are poor and marginalized. What could be more basic than that message Jesus gave? And in fact, more than once, he says this at the end of the day is going to be the final report card. You know, the sheep and the goats, who visited those in prison, who clothed the naked, who fed the hungry. That's how they get divided. So one idea is that we would always, at a parish level, diocese level, the whole church, keep as one of three things in the forefront of our mind, okay, we have to serve the poor and marginalized. The second, we have to transform people's lives. Those in the Catholic community would probably recognize the word conversion better. You know, I was trying to reach for a more general word than that. In other words, when people come, something is supposed to happen to them. You know, the Pope talks a lot about the joy of the gospel. So that's our job, to help people to feel more joyful or to come closer to the Lord, however we would describe a transformation that goes inside themselves. Or they're on the wrong path in life in some serious way, and they turn around and they walk more in the way of the Lord. So that would be transformative. We're going to always keep in mind, yes, we're here to serve and we're here to be a church that transforms lives.
And finally, R for reach out.
And we're going to have to reach out. You know, when I was a kid, we didn't have to reach out. You know, I mean, I grew up in one of these great ethnic neighborhoods in New York City, all Irish and Italian Catholics. Kids were born, you brought them to church, they went to Catholic school, and they just kept coming. And those days are just over. Not in every country in the world, but in many, too many countries in the United States, Europe, Oceania, those days are over, you know, and there are people who, I don't know what, they're bored, they're lazy, they're alienated, they have some fundamental disagreements with some of the things the church teaches. They play golf on Sunday. I mean, you know, there are dozens of reasons, but the bottom line is we're going to have to reach out because people are not going to show up. And this, I think, is another theme that the Pope is really, really big on. He talks about this a lot, you know, among many other images, the idea that a church that does not go outside of itself sooner or later sickens from the air of stale rooms.
This is very much, as you say, coming out of your experience as a banker, experience in management, secular management. There are those who would say, yes, very secular, very practical. Where is the room for the spirit in all this?
Okay, so thank you for asking that. That's a really important question and a great question. And, you know, I guess I want to say that at the end of the day, it makes no difference what I think. It's not my plan. It's Jesus' plan. And one of the chapters in the book tries to tie everything back to the life of Jesus and what we might call the culture, the way that the early generation of the Christians, especially the apostolic generation, lived and worked. You know, and every idea I proposed, that was kind of the touchstone. In other words, if I cannot, sometimes I use lingo that's familiar from my past, like accountable or entrepreneurial, that Jesus would never have used, or the apostles. But any time I use a word or idea like that, I try to tie it back, or I do tie it back, to our fundamental beliefs and tradition and history and text, because if we're not true to that, it makes no difference. Nothing I say makes any difference. And in fact, what I say is, you know, we don't have to turn ourselves into something we're not. We just have to drink more deeply from our first century well. In other words, you know, study what Jesus did, said, how he lived, look at what the first generation of apostles did and said. And, you know, look, a lot of times we talk about a secular, unfriendly, hostile culture. Okay, look, I'm sorry to say it, but frankly, those guys dealt with a much more hostile culture than we did. And there's a part of me that feels like, okay, I'm sorry, time's up to complain that it's all the problem of the secular culture. You know, it's time to get over it. And the apostles dealt with that culture, and we have to learn to deal with this one and thrive in it. And the last thing I say is to come back to the way you teed up the question. It is the work of the Spirit. I just was praising the way the apostles operated. But of course, after Jesus left and ascended, those guys just locked themselves up in a room. And for all we know, they'd still be there, except for the fact that the Holy Spirit came upon them. And I believe that very truly, you know, that we need to call for the Holy Spirit's enlightenment to know what to do, but also, you know, what we say the other gifts of the Spirit, you know, to be brave, to be courageous, and to know what are the right things to take chances on and the wrong things, you know, to be prudent, all these kinds of things.